Hello, I'm stand-up comedian James Mullinger and the co-founder of Edits magazine. This is Mullinger Meets Canadians, the podcast where we meet Canadians who are making waves on the world stage. In this episode, I'm meeting a person who I think of every morning over breakfast. I'm of course talking about entrepreneur Jolene Lasky. Jolene is the founder and president of Wabanaki Maple, a 100% indigenous female-owned maple syrup manufacturer in Tobique First Nation, New Brunswick. She was inspired to create this business based on what we're lucky enough to have access to here in the Maritimes. With healing and nourishing powers, maple syrup has been cherished by First Nations peoples for centuries. It was one of the many gifts shared with early settlers, helping them to survive our harsh winters. In this far-reaching and often unbearably moving interview, we discuss how she was supported as a female Indigenous entrepreneur in this region, how her company has grown, and how others can find opportunity here. As a huge fan and daily consumer of Wabanaki maple, I was delighted and excited to learn how her locally sourced syrup is aged in repurposed oak barrels acquired from Kentucky whiskey distilleries, how she's increased tourism to New Brunswick and employment here, and the ways that the Atlantic Canadian business community has supported her through COVID, and how she continues to grow today. As Jolene herself so beautifully puts it, we are creating a sweeter day in a traditional way by providing a taste of Indigenous culture through our barrel-aged maple syrup products. Here we go. Jolene, it is a huge honor to finally meet you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today with you as well. Looking forward to our chat.
Yeah, this is very exciting for me because I have to say what you do is incredible. And I'd love to just go back to the very beginning, because what you've done is put my two favorite things together, maple syrup and whiskey, which genius. Tell me how this came about.
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess, you know, there was a combination of things leading up to the maple syrup and the flavor of whiskey, but you know, I had some exposure to the industry, the maple syrup industry, and it was one of my favorite times when I could spend the season helping my sister, actually, who has a hobby sugar bush, and that in combination with trying to move forward and finding my own purpose, I guess it just made sense for me to get involved with the agriculture side. And that being said, it's, you know, lots of little steps in between, but I'm, you know, just wanted to expand and create something new with the product. So it's such a versatile product. You know, we have candies and sugars and things, and just wanted to play around with new ideas.
It's really incredible. And so was it a kind of a conscious thought that you wanted to kind of, you know, as an entrepreneur, create something? And when did that kind of conscious thought transition into this incredible creative idea?
I think it started several years back. I've always, you know, had most of my work experience has been in the food industry, as well as seasonal work on Christmas tree farms. And it was just, I came to a point where I wasn't quite satisfied with where I was in my career. And as you get older, you tend to, you know, want to find something more meaningful. And that's kind of where I decided that, you know, I started looking and investigating other options and ventures. And it happened to be that a seed had been planted, so to speak. And that's kind of how, you know, Wabanaki has grown to be what it is today.
Wow. And I mean, what's incredible about it is that you've been able to come up with something which is ingenious in its concept. Obviously, it's hugely successful, you know, as an entrepreneur, but also you're very adamant and you know, you find it very important to give back to your community and an environment. And you obviously find time to essentially become a spokesperson for kind of celebrating Indigenous cultures. How do you find time to do all of those things?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, that has been a challenge for me. And specifically, you know, like the thing that really drove me to launch this company and everything that it's about was going back, I'll just go back a little bit. I was raised and brought up in non-Indigenous communities. My father was, you know, in the military. So I wasn't connected to my own culture. And so after, you know, only 20 years ago, I found my way back. And that's kind of where the passion and desire to keep going with this company and share as much as I can. I mean, I'm still a student in learning the teachings and things like that, but that's where my passion, you know, I drive my driving force. And as a spokesperson, I never imagined myself to be a spokesperson. I was just doing something that I loved and I wanted to do to help our communities thrive, you know, economically and environmentally. So yeah, I guess that's kind of, it has been a challenge to juggle family, life, work. I have still yet a 15-year-old at home. So, he's a handful at times. But yeah, you know, there's that, that's a huge, I think for any entrepreneur, juggling and challenging, those challenges are still they're every day, right? And we just take it one step at a time.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it must be an incredible thing though to be knowing that you're doing something which A, you're passionate about, which people are obviously looking to you for. I mean the fact that you're obviously providing employment, and the knock-on effect of a successful business like yours, but also the educational side. I mean, you mentioned yourself that you didn't grow up in Indigenous communities but started to embrace it and learn about it. And of course, through what you do, you're now educating other people. How does that feel? And what's the feedback that you get from people, Indigenous and non-Indigenous, about what they learn from you?
Oh, you know what? The feedback has been fantastic. Mm. And I feel great that I'm able to share this little piece of our history and culture. I mean, there is so much to our culture and so many teachings and celebration ceremonies. So I've just kind of nicked the iceberg with it, but it feels good that, you know, people are constantly reaching out and they're giving all kinds of positive feedback and support. And that's why we're still, you know, we're still moving forward today, regardless of the pandemic and COVID. It's still, you know, it's our customers, our consumers that, you know, I'm very grateful for and their support. So
I love
yes,
that. Mm-hmm. Well, I am one of those customers. I have a belly full of pancakes and Wabanaki maple right now. I'm a huge fan, like I said. How long was the process between the kind of inception and the concept to, because I know, I mean, it takes an incredibly long time to, for example, just to take a sugar maple and wait for it to be matured. So can you talk me through the process from having the idea to the execution, but also, I mean, also the branding, because one of the things that first attracted me to what you do is your branding is just so beautiful. I mean, it almost looks like it kind of reminds me, like, it looks like a 5-star hotel resort, almost like a luxury, it screams of, and it really, really stands out on a retail display or indeed any display. So I'm really fascinated by that, the process from inception, creation and branding.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. Thank you though. We've had fantastic reviews on our branding. So I get, you know, we hit the mark with that. But going back to inception and to, you know, building and launching, it took, you know, basically about a year, to develop the idea and the business plan. And for me, I mean, it was all new. I had no previous business experience or training. And so, you know, I knew I had to step back and undergo some work, so that I could build a solid foundation. So, you know, within a year, I participated in, what they call the Indigenous, it's JEDI, Joint Economic Development. It was a non-for-profit Indigenous organization that helps with foster Indigenous entrepreneurs. So they had programs available and I enrolled, and that's kind of where I got the basics and the foundation, the plan. That being said, I made key partnerships and relationships with mentors and coaches to help me get through some of those pieces. we knew we had the product because we were already experimenting with it in-house. But it was, you know, all the other moving pieces, the marketing, like you said, how do you launch a website and so forth. So I had great support through mentorship and different organizations and associations to help me work towards the launching and continuing to grow. That being said, you know, I connected and outsourced some of my marketing piece, but I knew that whichever direction and whichever, you know, the brand was going to look like, it was going to speak richness as in our culture and that vibrant piece that I want it to be premium and elegant. And so, and different.
Yeah.
Because that's what we are. So
that's
it.
Well, it really does stand out for all of those ways, and I commend you for having the kind of the boldness to say I want this to look premium and elegant, because sometimes there is, especially in smaller places, there's a fear of that. People are worried that people might think that if something looks too premium, they're worried that it might look luxury and scare people off. But not everything has to be look like a tourist gift. You know what I mean? Things can look beautiful and still be accessible. It's really wonderful to hear about all of the support that you had launching the business and getting it off the ground. Do you think that's a kind of innate in New Brunswick sensibility whereby people are kind of always looking to support entrepreneurs and business leaders in that way?
For sure. I really think that, you know, living in New Brunswick and especially I think in our smaller communities, it's about, you know, supporting and rising each other up. I feel a very tightness and tight knit within our communities, just local communities. And they've been the first ones to help, you know, buy our products, talk about us and share our products and give them as gifts. So, you know, really and truly, I couldn't pick a better place to live rather than New Brunswick and Tobik First Nation.
That's so beautiful, because it isn't always the first place people think of as the ideal spot to start a new business. But for me, as someone that's moved here from away, I just find it incredibly unique, because in so many other parts of the world, if you want to try something new or start a new business, people think of you as competition. And yet here, you just feel this kind of this warmth. And I think, as you beautifully put it, like people want to prop each other up and help everyone. And that inclusive nature of the New Brunswick people is just something that really I feel quite unique to this place.
I agree. I totally agree there with you. Like I said, it's I've been pretty sheltered. So New Brunswick has been my home base for most of my life. And again, I can't imagine living elsewhere. So.
That's nice. And you mentioned that when you were growing up, your father was in the military. Can you tell me a bit about your childhood and your upbringing and how that has kind of turned you into this kind of business leader that you are today?
Well, wow. Honestly, first and foremost, my parents, I got to say, I grew up in a very, very well loved and supportive family. I have five other siblings. And like I said, my father was joined the military at a young age, and my roots, you know, my indigenous roots are through my father. And so, you know, that's kind of why we were close knit, just because that's who all we had it, I think, at times because of our traveling and relocations and things like that. But we, you know, with both of my parents, they both worked so hard and they instilled so many great qualities and attributes with all of us. You know, the good, strong work ethic, being committed, doing, you know, if you're going to start something, you know, stay with it and do it, you know, do it to the best of your ability. We just had a very, very close-knit and supportive, loving family that, you know, and the conversations could be a little wild and open at times, but
that's a good thing.
It is a good thing. So I honestly couldn't have asked for a better upbringing. And so, you know, I attribute a lot of my success to having that right and that secure upbringing that I had. I'm very fortunate. Unfortunately, I speak today and I kind of have tears in my eyes because I just recently lost my father, but I take away all the good things and all the great memories.
It's those memories when you're growing up that shape who we are. And I relate, and I know where you're coming from. I really, really do. My grandmother actually died yesterday from in the UK. Yeah, and it's one of those terrible COVID things. And it's interesting what you were just saying, because it's that thing where you're clinging on to those memories that you have, where it sounds like for you, your father was the person that taught you what you could do. And my grandmother was the only person that when I was a kid that I wanted to be a comedian and a journalist, and everyone else said, that's ridiculous, get a proper job. She was the only person that said, I really do understand where you're coming from.
My condolences. And I guess briefly, it was like, I remember as a young girl, growing up, and my father would all, like, regardless of what it was, he would always say, well, if you're going to do something, do it right. But that meant just do your best. It didn't mean it had to be perfect. It was do your best and give 100% at those things. And that's what I'm doing. That's how, I live out my days, and just being committed and dedicated and doing my best.
Absolutely. Success is not about financial reward or possessions. It's about waking up, doing what the best you can, and then going to bed that night knowing you did the best that you possibly could. And I think that's the thing that, like you say, that your father would be proud of, and I hope my grandma would be proud of me too. Like that same feeling. No, it's beautiful. When it comes to community support and the way that people look out, what can people do more of to support local businesses and local entrepreneurs, especially at this kind of juncture we're at with COVID?
Gosh. I mean, I guess, I think, with the pandemic and everything and how things are shifted and pivoted, everyone is a lot of the shopping is online now. It's all e-commerce. But I think that still the big corporations are, there's still a lot to be said where we still need to look, and don't forget about the small business people that are trying to make ends meet, and, shop local, support your local companies and businesses. That to me would be one way. A lot of us are right there in your own back door. So, yeah.
And lots of us will deliver quicker than Amazon, because Amazon might be able to do it in 24 hours. We will do it same day. A perfect example is, I think one of the first times that I had Wabanaki maple was actually when I was gifted an NB box about 2 years ago, which is such an incredible... it's such an incredible concept anyway, whereby people can, of course, enjoy New Brunswick products in this way, and of course share them. I mean, this is one of the things that I also find unique to this place, is entrepreneurs like NB Box curating the very best of what we have here. And again, I mean, it has the dual purpose of supporting the business, but also making people aware. And like I say, for me, it was my first experience of Wabanaki Maple was inside an NB Box, and then I became a regular customer.
Well, I got to say, NB Box, Ingrid is fantastic, the owner and founder. I love Ingrid. She's been one of our biggest supporters, and what she's put together is absolutely fantastic with her gifts from New Brunswick made and supporting all those businesses. I adore her and her business, her company.
So obviously, 2020 was a year that none of us expected. None of us saw it coming. How did you manage to kind of weather the storm, ride the storm, and what were the ways in which you were able to kind of keep operating, producing, and indeed keep selling?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, yeah, we were hit pretty hard at the beginning when it hit us. It was so unexpected, and it was scary, not knowing if we were going to be able to survive as a young company. We were just only started our second year in operations, but a lot. And the other thing was, a lot of one of our revenue streams, the big piece was special events and trade shows that we had planned to attend. That being said, with everything, all the restrictions and closures, we were very fortunate that we had our website with an e-commerce already launched. So, you know, pivoting some of those and transitioning to doing online virtual trade shows is where we kind of went. And that helped with our sales on our store. But yeah, I mean, so we're, like I say, there's silver lining too. I try to look for a silver lining, and that was one of them, was having the store up and running, because, you know, that's where a lot of our traction, you know, how the company continued to grow.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the things. And as you say, I mean, there's nothing ideal about a global pandemic, obviously, but I think it's definitely a very kind of East Coast and an Atlantic Canadian mindset that we are all trying to find, you know, the light in the tunnel, essentially. And, you know, one of the positives is finding those ways that or pursuing the things that we had on the back burner. I mean, this podcast is a perfect example of something which I've been talking about doing for years, and 3 weeks into lockdown, it became a reality. So it's definitely kind of, I think, forced us as entrepreneurs and as creatives to kind of think more. Where do you see things headed? Do you think that maybe even after, say, the whole world is vaccinated, that actually some of the things that have come out of this, like, I mean, you mentioned virtual trade shows. I mean, I'm sure traditionally, if there was two or three trade shows happening in different parts of the world on the same day, you wouldn't be able to obviously be in all three places. But suddenly now, in an age of virtual, you could, in theory, do all three. Do you think some things like that may continue?
Oh, I think so for sure. I think definitely. I mean, there has been benefits. It can save on some of your expenses and traveling and so forth. So, you know, why not? Why not utilize what we do have? And it's been working. So I can foresee us staying, you know, I still enjoy in-person events. So that's one of my favorite things. I love meeting the people that have tried our syrup or the first time they do try it, you know, so, and talking to them and explaining about our products and how, you know, the relationship of Indigenous people and maple syrup as a food source. So obviously I would love to see it kind of go back to somewhat normal where we can get out and be around and connect with people.
It's definitely something we all miss, that connection. But obviously, until then, it's, you know, this is the world we're living in. And I guess the important thing is, as long as we all stay connected. I mean, you mentioned then about, you know, educating people about the historical element. I mean, can you tell me a bit about that? Because I know, obviously, I mean, not many people know that way before, you know, sugar came with the fur trade, Indigenous peoples of the First Nations were harvesting savory sap from maple trees many, many years before. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Sure. I mean, and this is a lot of the information you may get, it's been passed down verbally. So there's a lot of documentation's hasn't been there necessarily, but what I understand it to be is that, you know, they worked very hard, and it was mostly the women that actually managed the sugar groves back, you know, hundreds of years ago, and did the work of collecting the sap from the trees in their birch bark baskets, and then bringing it to their camp to be boiled down in hollowed out logs and heating the stones, keeping the fires going. So, you know, I just found it so interesting, and, you know, wonders like to myself, like, oh my gosh, that would have, like, so much work and dedication to do that, to be able to make throughout the spring, or it was what they relied on in the spring. It was the first harvest of a food. So it helped with, maple syrup has lots of nutrients, or the maple sap water, and they would drink that to help replenish some of the nutrients that they would have lost throughout the winter, you know, season. So I just found it so interesting for myself to learn, you know, a little bit about, you know, how it was and how they, you know, would tap the trees with and use, like, maybe willow, hollowed out willow to so that the sap could drain into their birch baskets. And they would have had to make these birch baskets, you know, hundreds of them to gather that sap. So I just get really emotional thinking about that.
Yeah, I know. It's incredible. As you say, the strength of them and that. I mean, as a proud feminist, I love stories like this, and I love the fact that what you've created is a product and a thing you're passionate about that tastes delicious, but is also steeped in history, and the fact that you're able to educate people while also feeding their taste buds is quite a beautiful thing.
Well, and I got to tell you, like I say, I am still a student, and I look for things every day to learn from. So especially with my culture, it's just something that I have embraced and I really respectfully want to continue sharing what I know or what I learn.
Amazing. I mean, tell me a bit about the actual the process, because I know obviously that the syrup's obviously sourced locally and then it's repurposed in oak barrels from whiskey distilleries. But can you tell me how that process takes place and how those delicious flavors come out?
Well, it basically, we source our maple syrup, yes, for now, because we do want to close the loop on that, but that's another topic we'll get to.
Next time.
Next time, maybe. So we source previously used spirit barrels as well as new oak barrels. And what happens is we transfer the raw syrup into our barrels. There's a process of our aging times. Everything's monitored and tested to see when it's the most delectable, the flavors the best. And once we determine that they're ready to be bottled and ready for the shelf, we do all our in-house bottling and labeling and packaging. So yeah, I mean, it typically can be anywhere from 3 months to 6 months before a barrel is ready to be bottled.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a
That's
matter
incredible.
Of the esters from the barrels naturally extracting into the syrup.
It's truly, truly incredible. And the process, every second of that process is worth it. I can safely say as a fan. and what's next for you? Like, are you constantly trying to evolve and look at the next thing, or is it generally a case of you're doing the thing you love? So how can we just keep doing it?
I'm not going to stay in one place. I'm going to continue moving with the company though, and growing in different industry. We're looking at building towards the tourism industry as well once things settle with COVID, but new products. I have, there's a number of items that we're hoping we can put up on our website, this year, at least a couple, and we're going to keep growing and experimenting, but it is trial and error, see what's going to work. But yeah, there's definitely a lot more to Wabanaki Maple that I have in the works.
Amazing. I mean, you mentioned tourism, and I don't think we should be afraid to talk about the things that we all want to come back. And of course, no one's encouraging people to travel now when it's not safe. But things will go back to normal in a year, 2 years. New Brunswick tourism is an incredible feeder of the economy. But of course, the one thing we all want for New Brunswick tourism is for it to grow and continue thriving back to how it was. Can you tell me a bit about that project and ideas that you have? Because I mean, of course, there is huge interest, not just nationally but globally, to learn more about Indigenous history within Canada and especially within New Brunswick. So I'm sure there's a big story there for you to tell.
I mean, for now, more short term and then the long term. But the short term right now is looking as though we're planning to expand our building. We've outgrown our current facility. So we are planning an expansion, and with that, it would entail having a retail storefront / storytelling area, and to share, the important significance with the maple syrup in our culture, as well as offering a culinary experience with it. There's tons of little things that you can do, like smoked salmon over a fire pit. So those are little ideas that we'd like to incorporate with our storefront and visitor experience. And more long term is, we wanted to close the loop here with you know, we have great partners with our maple syrup and sourcing it, but we'd also like to have our own sugary where we could take people back in time and kind of go through the steps from then till, you know, the settlers and now where we're at. So there's a lot of work ahead of us, but that's the goal, is to keep moving forward, to be able to share what we know or what I know with the industry and with others, to connect them.
That's amazing. I mean, that has the such incredible potential for tourism for this region. That really is such exciting news. And of course, I mean, it helps that you are also located in an incredibly beautiful part of New Brunswick. So the combination of people being able to come, see that, experience it, and also learn so much. That's really, really exciting.
Oh, thank you. Absolutely, I agree with you. It's this area is absolutely beautiful, with so many the forestries and the waterways, the medicines. It's beautiful, just beautiful.
It's so exciting. And I mean, as I say, I mean, it's one of those things that like so many great New Brunswick businesses, the potential for multifaceted spin-offs of things. I mean, the fact that everything you just described to me, you know, it sounds so exciting. But then, of course, then you think about the benefit that has to hotels, or potentially people opening hotels and restaurants locally. Like, I mean, you're obviously very, very passionate about the heritage aspect and the cultural aspect, but obviously you're very passionate about your local community. All of these ideas must be incredibly exciting to the local community, and of course the local businesses.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and that's the thing. It is. We're so tight. It's such a tight-knit community here in Tobik-Nugukuk. It's everyone knows everybody. And that's, you know, that's probably, it could have its downside too, but I try to look at it as a positive thing. And absolutely, you know, our chief counsel, everyone here has been, you know, very supportive. And yeah, I'm excited about it all.
That's nice. As you say, it's a plus. And if you're good at what you do and people like what you do, it's nice to live in a small place. But you can't do anything wrong. You can never put a foot wrong, because
I don't know about that.
And then the other thing is, of course, I mean, sometimes you just want to nip into the local shop and get out quickly. But when you know everyone, that's not an easy thing to do, is it?
No, it isn't. It isn't. So, I mean, like I say, it has the upsides and downsides sometimes. Just depends, right?
Oh, it's so beautiful. I can't thank you enough for your insights, Jolene, and everything that you do for the community, but also for my taste buds. It's really, I'm a huge fan, and I also can't wait to come and visit you this summer and really see it myself.
Oh, I am so happy. This has been a wonderful chat with you. And I say thank you. It's been a wonderful, wonderful day chatting with you. Love your accent, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I love yours. That's why I left these accents behind. I don't like my own accent. I find it very grating. So that's why I left the English behind. I staged my own Brexit.
Well, as you said, I am going to be looking forward to meeting you down the road in the spring, maybe, when everything's it's starting to bloom, maybe.
Absolutely. I can't wait. And I also cannot thank you enough for your time and insights today. It's been truly magical.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Mullinger Meets Canadians. If you like greatness, creativity, being inspired, laughing, or just love Canada as much as I do, then this is the podcast for you. So please do subscribe and review the show now. And be sure to order Jolene's beautiful maple syrup from www.wabanakimaple.com. Follow them on Instagram at Wabanaki Maple, and like their Facebook page. Just search for Wabanaki Maple. Further details can be found on the Edit website, maritimeedit.com, and I will see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Podstarter.